Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
So, Nick, we got to see the return of Aleister Black in the flesh, not in a video package, to interfere and apparently start a new feud with Big E sort of out of nowhere. I'm kind of curious how they extrapolate that from his messages and his videos. Do you like the – you with me that Big E will be his first opponent based on what we saw tonight? And do you like that matchup? And do you think there's sort of a backstory you can extrapolate from Black's messages the last few weeks?
Oh, I definitely think it's the first opponent for him in Big E. But wait, I just want to first start off by saying how disappointed I am that you didn't have a live guitarist leading me in. I really felt like I deserved that at this point. I think Aleister Black returning is, in fact, the story of the show. I think in general, I don't know that there's going to be some tremendous backstory there. I'm really curious to see what the character's motivations have become and how they tie into Big E. But Big E's an interesting choice. You can't simultaneously have two of these guys who are in desperate need of wins in order to have their careers defined up and not have either of them lose. So that's a really interesting choice to me, especially when Big E seems to be on this one foot in, one foot out type trajectory. But Aleister Black, I mean, if you were looking for a beautiful black mask to kick off this new run, he definitely hit it and got that great kick in at the very end. Really left me wanting to see a whole lot more. As someone who really doesn't know a whole lot about Aleister Black's history and all that has, you know, created this mythological, you know, view of him. But I'm really excited moving forward with him. And Big E as the first choice, well, it's telling in a few different ways. One is that Big E is someone who's being entrusted to get, you know, him over at that next level. But also, does this mean Big E will be putting him over? And what does that mean for Big E's long term?
Well, I just think one of them needs to hire a guitar player and then everything will be solved. I mean, that'll lead to the decisive finish. I mean, you know, WWE is in the business of not, as Todd Martin talked about on the flagship yesterday in The Fix, fake wins. You know, it's all about fake wins. Nobody really beats anybody. It's all sometimes, you know, I shouldn't overstate it, but so often finishes now are distraction-based and, you know, someone being distracted by someone playing a guitar or someone wearing a crown or, you know, whatever it is. And so, I mean, I don't want to be too negative about Big E and Aleister Black as a feud because I'm intrigued by it and I think it has some of the conundrums you speak of that are legit. The part that I think frustrates me is, as you bring up very valid points, that's what makes the matchup compelling.
Yeah.
Yet, we look at if the way WWE books, we're not really going to get a finish. Like it's like if you watch NHL playoff games and it's always clearly incompetent refereeing leads to one team winning and the other losing. Like you would just stop investing in star players and championships if it was just always, and I'm a little bitter about last night's Wild game. So I'm pulling from there a little bit after today's talk radio. But you know, you would disinvest in a product where you never felt like anybody truly beat anybody based on what happens inside the ropes. It was kind of my frustration with the NXT cage match on Tuesday. It was entertaining, but it was just too much interference with Austin Theory in a match that's supposed to settle things inside the cage. So I want what you said to be what we're talking about and not have in the back of my mind or the jokes we tell, you know, what will actually be the finish. So one guy wins, but the other guy is protected. So the other guy didn't really win. If they don't take that approach, I mean, I'm with you. I don't know who they put over Strong over the other clean because I don't think they're ready to give up on Big E. But with Aleister Black, you can't try to – because the challenge, Nick, with this is how do you revive somebody after they were sort of, you know, just they disappeared, they weren't getting a consistent push. On a meta level, I think fans sensed Vince McMahon didn't really believe in him or know what to do with him. You can't have him come back and not – be impressive. So I don't know where they're going to go with it. I again fear it's such an even matchup for the reasons you state. There probably won't be a decisive winner or loser. There'll be some sort of interference or distraction that transitions to a new feud, just like we saw tonight in the Fatal Four Way.
Right, absolutely. But here's the thing, Wade. Just even his presence in that last moment of SmackDown was enough to feel fresh. You know, it's, while SmackDown has been so good lately, that mid-card is stale without being, you know, damagingly stale. It's good. The match tonight was wonderful in terms of the main event, but it needs new blood, and things just pretty much still feel like there's a sameness each week. So just having an infusion of a new character felt novel. It felt fresh. So I think for that sake, it's good news. I think that Big E is being seen as he can absorb losses at this point without too much damage being put on his name. But what's interesting is, you know, we are the changeup of the calendar and whatnot has just really, you know, in terms of when Money in the Bank is and what different opportunities might come anybody's way. You know, Big E is someone that I still anticipate is going to have a really substantial push coming that I think will be abrupt and it will be all the way. So I don't know that that necessarily needs to start anytime soon, but I think having Aleister Black debut and face opposite Big E still feels more important than if he debuted against someone way too far down the card, or even like a Baron Corbin, or at this point, you know, Nakamura with him and his cat wearing crowns. I mean, I think there's worse people to debut him against that than Big E. And so for that point, I think it's good news.
Yeah. I if you're trying to get Big E ready at some point for Roman Reigns, I don't think you can afford to have him lose to Aleister Black, though. That's part of what, you know, that's part of the intrigue here. You're right. I mean, Big E can afford a loss, but not if they're going to try to rev him up for Reigns. And I wonder if that's even in the cards anymore, if he is the first opponent for Black and Black gets a decisive win because they want to build him up.
Yeah, it's possible. Listen, the way to not build Big E up is to have him crouching under the camera for when the interviewer announces his name and have him pop up like a Pop-Tart. That's not going to get him there either, Wade.
Yeah. You know, you wonder if Big E has the desire or – I don't know. I mean, it's a difference of opinion, so I don't want to say it's a lack of desire. I'm sure he wants to be as successful as he can be, but it just feels when I watch him not be able to stay with a serious approach to his career as we see it on air for longer than 5 seconds before he breaks into something goofy. I know he thinks that's what brought him, but I don't think it brings him all the way to the top tier. You know, I think it keeps him selling merchandise and being popular with fans, and he can be an upper mid-card guy. But, you know, if I'm Vince McMahon watching Big E, and maybe this is the Big E Vince wants, and maybe it's the Big E that Vince thinks, or maybe this is the most Vince thinks Big E can be. But I watch, and if I'm Vince watching that, I go, I don't know if I can put that guy against Roman. You know, I've seen glimpses here and there, but then he just doesn't stick with it. And I sort of end up a little deflated looking around elsewhere for how to fill the Roman Reigns calendar.
Right, right. You know, Big E might be someone that has been looked at as this is going to be someone that we're going to position against Roman, but not this month. Or maybe next month. But nah, next month comes and there's like, you know, it doesn't still seem so fresh. And I think, you know, if he is being protected or positioned, I should say, for a down-the-line feud with Roman Reigns, you have to wonder where, you know, eventually, you know, when Vince looks at his toys and says, I've been looking at this toy for so long right now, this isn't the one that I want, you know, going all the way against Roman. You know, this might – he might be playing up to what he might assume Vince want him to be, but we're seeing that this isn't putting any urgency behind his push or any urgency behind, you know, anything about how his character is being presented. In many ways, you know, while I certainly wouldn't pretend to understand what it's like to be backstage of WWE, you almost want to just scream through to the TV, to the Big E, the man, and say, this ain't doing it for you, kid. You know, like, let's try something different on your own. And I think that's where he is as a character.
Nick, on another topic, have you heard WWE is going to be on the road again starting in July?
You got to be kidding me. No.
Yeah.
Listen, I do think, Wade, there was a pep in the step of this show. And
oh,
I think it was attached to that messaging, whether it was a threat from Fox or just an excitement about moving forward and what is to come. It definitely led to some enthusiasm, I think, in the performances, a shakeup in how the show started off. And just something, a brighter day to look forward to. So for that, a thumbs up for me.
Well, you know what will put a pep in their step is SmackDown last Friday dropping under 2 million viewers to 1.917 million viewers. The rating 1.20, down from 1.37, 1.25, 1.28, 1.32, 1.28. I say all that to illustrate they almost dropped below 1.2, when the lowest prior rating had been 1.25, and that was the low point of the last 5 weeks. So,
right.
You know, Fox looks at that, and they look at the demo rating of 18 to 49-year-olds, a 0.44. 18 to 49, yeah. 0.65 the week before. You know, they can talk all they want about people buying tickets for Roman Reigns, and I think they should, and we'll explore more as the show goes on, you know, how much the pep in the step serves them strategically and how effective it might be. But that's not a good demo rating. That's not a good total mm-hmm. viewership number. And Roman Reigns, they can talk about him being a ticket seller and you got to see him in person, but that's not a good number for him, no matter what the competition is on that night of the week. Fox paid for more. So I do think tonight's show was, okay, we're going back on the road, and I think with slow WrestleMania ticket sales and all the plugs they had to do up until days before the event, I think they're thinking, we really need to generate a sense of excitement that this is the place to be and the thing to do this summer. And then you add to it, Fox isn't happy, and you got to have energy level. You can respond to any of that too, but also tell me what you thought of the champions other than Roman standing on the stage for that, you know, Parade of Champions type entrance, which I still feel is weird, and I'm not quite sure ultimately what it was all about.
Okay, a few thoughts. First about the ratings. I think that there's a couple things to note. Get the knives out, people. I think Cesaro was a big part of the problem with the recent drop. And if not him, the fact that there was nobody that clearly the folks who were writing the show and producing the show were excited about to really have that continuation of what we've seen as these Roman Reigns blood feuds. I think that was missing, and that check kind of came due a couple weeks ago. Another thing, Wade, that I think is interesting is, listen, I think the rating this week is going to be fascinating to watch. It is beautiful weather here in the Northeast. And, you know, you have to remember, since WWE's been on Fox, they haven't gone through a beautiful spring, summer season while there wasn't a pandemic. So, you know, we can talk about competition all we want, but they have not really brought to Fox that experience of what it's like to really be in true competition with the weather and the seasons that come. So that's the thought that came to my mind as I was walking back from getting an ice cream cone going, I don't really want to go watch wrestling tonight, but I got to. So that was if I'm having that internal debate, yeah. A casual fan is thinking the same damn thing. With regards to the parade of champions.
I'll throw out there too real quick, Nick, and this isn't your territory, but NBA and NHL playoffs are going, and there's a lot of regional games with a lot of hometown interest right now. The most teams at once ever are in the playoffs right now. Because the NHL and NBA are both starting their playoffs in round one at the same time. There's this overlap, tons of win in advance, lose and you're done, qualifiers. There's just so much going on there. And then also Major League Baseball in session now. So they have this new competition. Your point is great, but then you add to it the playoffs. And, I mean, there's no guarantee they don't take another dip tonight because of the NHL and NBA. And now as movie theaters open and like you said, people just want to get out and eat out at a restaurant on a Friday night, it's a very astute point that this is new territory and the bar and the level that was set in the wintertime, and by spring it was a pandemic.
Right, right, right. Well, and Wade, about the start with the Parade of Champions, I actually really loved it. But there were elements that I didn't like, which was the corniness predominantly of the Mysterios, just like, every time the camera panned to them, just like re-holding up the belts like it was the first time. I felt like the first time it started, it was cool. Or if they waited to be formally introduced by Sonya Deville, that would work. But there's a few things. First of all, I liked Sonya Deville this week. I thought that it just her presentation, the seriousness, it wasn't the old Vicky Guerrero or any kind of the heelish general manager type, you know, presentation. She was fine for what she was. And I also liked the built-in story about Adam Pearce being on the road, scouting out new locations for the tour. That's just like a little nuance, though, that, you know, they could have easily just ignored and you never would have questioned. But it was like, okay, I kind of liked that. I kind of liked that little attention to detail. But it was a different start. And you're right. The best part about it was Roman not being there. Him not being there at all actually made him seem so much more special. And yet I thought, too, it was kind of a good look for me to kind of look at all of the champions in one shot. I liked looking at the diversity of the performer. I liked looking at, honestly, people who are really proud to hold these titles. You know, there's times when people hold championships and it's like, whatever. But you, even in particular, you have the Mysterios and you have Tamina and Natalya as the bookends of that lineup who are so excited right now to literally be holding those titles. And then you have Bianca Belair, who also still carries with her in that championship that really that feeling of special. And I loved when, you know, Paulie came out, which was interesting. I thought it was interesting he came out to the old Roman Reigns music, and how he acknowledged Apollo as, you know, being different from all the other clowns he was looking at. Like, I thought that was just brilliant stuff. And it was a different way to start the show, which, you know, while SmackDown is so good week in, week out, it's still, there's moments like this where you realize, oh, yeah, that sameness is still present. It's good to break up the routine. And I thought that did that.
Yeah, I think there was quite a bit to like about the opening segment, and I'm all for WWE stressing more often who the champions are. Sometimes it can draw too much attention to how many championships they have, and maybe it's too many, but that's an argument for another day, and one I'm not taking a side on when it comes to the mix on SmackDown. But the everyone gathering on the stage issue is if everybody acted dignified, it would be one thing, but, like, they were told to dance. They were told to dance and show energy and vigor and excitement, and it was just too much. I mean, Belair, I think, it's way too often is in that mode of, you know, I mean, just I'm imitating her right now. I'm glad we're not on video, but twirling the ponytail and smiling and swiveling the hips, it's like a cartoon character. It's not a grounded real person. It doesn't feel like it feels like an amplified cartoonish version of what people who don't watch wrestling think wrestlers are like. And I think that's patronizing to the audience.
Right. And wait, I was going to tell you this. I'm sorry to cut you off, but that reminds me. I wanted to tell you this the other day during the round table of after the pay-per-view. Her patting her ass routine is like, I mean, the cringe of the cringe in mid-match. So let alone the dancing and the twirling. Yeah, I get that. And I also get that I'm not always going to get it. Like, I'm there. Like, I understand that. But, like, come on. Like, it's really not great.
A big part of their audience are not only the slice of people who think everything Bianca's doing is totally culturally current and perfect. There's a real wide audience that he's trying to appeal to. And I don't think Dominic, who can't dance, and I'm sorry, Dominic, but maybe you can in a different context. Maybe this was awkward for you. But that was, like, really embarrassing, too. Like, don't put people in a position too initially unnatural or in outside of their comfort zone. It was like when Triple H got goaded into dancing with New Day. It's like there's some people who you want them to retain some dignity and have some semblance of agency to present themselves in a way that is within their comfort zone. And it just wasn't. I mean, I know Tamina's genuinely excited about being champion, and I thought that was a really cool moment for her. But Natalya and Tamina, too, it felt like they were just yelled at with this over-the-top pep talk that their jobs depended upon being the most – that it's like there'd be the most excited person of the night would get a bonus. And so – you know, I'm with you on Sonya. I'm with you on stressing champions. I'm with you on changing things up. But let the wrestlers have some dignity instead of playing down to the stereotype of what a just over-the-top cartoon caricature of human beings that Vince McMahon wants his wrestlers to play.
Can I also just say, speaking of comfort zone, how happy I am with Rey Mysterio's mask this week? This is my internal feud. You know, yeah, I have this feud. It's just – it makes or breaks my weekend, Wade. I think I misspoke earlier, by the way. I didn't mean Paul Heyman shouting out Apollo. I meant when Bayley came out. I thought Bayley, by the way, still is just to me just performer of the night who's not Roman Reigns. You know, I just think she is not relinquishing that spot in her losses, and I think that's brilliant.
I'm glad you brought her up because she is – every time she comes on screen now, I'm like, she is going to be one of the three MVPs of the show that she's on.
Yep.
She is so good right now. She knows her voice. She is a veteran. She's a veteran presence with a ton of experience who is – and this plays to my point about everybody on the stage. She's playing a role that she is – that is absolutely in her comfort zone. It is a heel with dignity, and yet she's – you know, she hits enough buttons to turn people into wanting to trigger people to boo her, but she doesn't do so in a way that's just, and it's weird to say, because anybody who was on a wrestling fan would watch what she did tonight and say, well, that was very cartoonish. There's a certain level of over the top toughness that's going to be part of a lot of wrestling characters. But it feels like it's true to her character. Even Sami Zayn, I mean, I feel like he's being true to the character he plays. But yeah. Dominic trying to dance, Belair trying to play into whatever she's trying to do in an over-the-top way. Like, there's just too many people who are outside of that comfort zone. And Sonya, by the way, she's dignified. She's in her comfort zone. She's a real person. And she's, like, smart and sly. And you're just waiting for her to do something that she gets away with while pretending she isn't doing it. And that's really fun to watch in terms of especially your dynamic with Adam Pearce. So, yeah, well, we got a lot more to talk about. We've got callers lined up. We have our inbox we're going to look at. So let's introduce the show and get on with it. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, May 21st, 2021. I'm Wade Keller, host of the program. Thanks to Zach Cadorn for guest hosting for me after AEW Dynamite this week. By the way, I thought it was a really good episode of Dynamite. There wasn't like this blockbuster big match or big angle, but it was a night of really good promos. And I thought a lot of things that I think they normally are a little off on, I thought they corrected course on. It was just a model show for building a pay-per-view, building another program, and giving some valuable promo time to people. I like the format. I like the so for those who didn't hear the Wade Keller Hotline for VIP members afterwards, I was a fan of the show. I talked about it with Todd Martin on yesterday's Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast, our Blue Logo show, and that is available to everybody if you want to hear the Thursday flagship. We talked more at length about AEW and Dynamite. But thanks to Zach for hosting and Tyler Sage for co-hosting on Wednesday. Today we're talking SmackDown. Tonight we are. And Nick Barbati is with me from Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure and also PWTorch.com writer covering SmackDown with his Hits and Misses column. Nick, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Wade, always a pleasure. So glad to be back. Excited for the callers tonight. I hope we have some of our usuals and some new ones too, because they always make me so happy when we have a new caller.
Yes, yes. We love first-time callers, and of course we adore our regulars. Well, most of them. Yeah. There's one or two, but I won't name names. but you can think, is it me? All right. So speaking of callers, let's give out the phone numbers. If you want to get in line on the phone banks, the number is 347-215-8558. We'd love to hear from a first-time caller. Just call that number and push 1 on your keypad, and that will flag you on the switchboard. You can also email the show, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. So let's to it, and we will begin today with Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, you're up first today for change. Good to hear from you. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Wade and Nick, good to talk to you guys. Wade, again, you always throw me off, man. You always do it.
I know.
You always
I'm
get
trying.
Me ready. I'm
going to
focus, and I'm and then all of a sudden, bam, you get me right away. But no, it's good. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good, good. Good.
Doing great.
Yes, I guess I'll go to the first part of what you guys are talking about as far as at the beginning of the show. And it was kind of like you guys said, it was a mixed bag too. I kind of thought, I'm still against it just because I don't like the people. Like, why would Apollo Crews want to be with all those other people? Like, I don't like the way they do that. I don't like them being together. I don't like them acting all jokey and weird. And so I didn't really care for it. I liked, you know, that Heyman came out and said that Roman's, you know, not a title holder. He's a champion. Like, that was cool. Like, Heyman, Paul was great tonight, as always. I mean, it's so fun to always watch him do his thing.
It was almost worth it, Sean, even with both of our kind of, drawbacks to the segment. It was almost all worth it just to have Roman Reigns have enough dignity to not be part of it and to have Paul Heyman sort of accentuate that point. It almost offset some of the negatives of, poor Dominic and Ray having to dance and everyone being sort of over the top.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that part was the best part for sure. And Bailey was, great in her role. I mean, overall, the show for me was just kind of okay. It was one of the weaker shows I think they've had in a while. Sonya was good. I love when Sonya said, when she was talking to when Jimmy first came on, and she said, basically word for word, that matches, no, but you can't just do the, you guys against the Street Profits. You have to, the matches have to be advertised and they have to be built. And I'm like, true, very true, but you guys don't do that as much as you should. So maybe that will help do that more often. What did you guys, Did you guys catch that? And I thought that was really funny when you brought that up.
Yes, Nick, I'm glad you brought that up, Sean. Like, apparently Dominik and Robert Roode, not worth hyping, not that big of a deal. Apparently Shinsuke and Baron Corbin, not that big of a deal, not worth building up. I know they portrayed the six-woman match as sort of impromptu, so that's a little different. But, yeah, Nick, I sort of got a kick out of the idea of her going, you know, yeah, with any match that just we don't announce ahead of time certainly isn't worthy of build-up. That was sort of the implication of what she said.
Right, yeah, no, it's so true. But I do think within that, though, the fact that now we've gone 2 weeks in a row where we've had a pretty much a marquee match announced a week in advance. Let's take our wins where we can find them, guys. Like let's take a win there.
I'm with you. I thought announcing the IC title match a week at a time, and now the Street Profits against the Usos, which is a top headline out of tonight's show, also a week at a time is good. And I don't think you want to overwhelm people with matches that they don't care that much about, that aren't that big of a deal. You know, maybe two matches is good sometimes, but if you do three or four. You know, AEW often announces three or four matches, and I'm not, like, against it, but I think there is a consideration to, are you throwing so much information at viewers that the thing that's really going to possibly make a difference isn't going to stick? And I know I feel that way sometimes, especially when AEW, you know, right before the main event or, you know, deep into the second hour, like, the announcers all just throw a barrage of things at you, and it's a lot to take in 45 seconds. You know, WWE, you know, I heard years ago Kevin Dunn wants people to remember 2.5 things from every episode of WWE TV. You know, two main things and sort of in the back of their mind a third thing. And they kind of stick to that, you know. I mean, not as a, like a hard, fast rule every single week, but that's sort of the spirit of, you know, let's not overwhelm viewers. Let's not try to do too much at once. And, you know, we can pick on them for the, I don't think the word is irony, but sort of the self-awareness perhaps that Sonya had saying that about what that says about other matches. But it is nice to have a big match announced a week ahead of time with the drama leading into it, which we'll certainly discuss. Sean, back to you for more.
Yeah, and I was, and then for the six-person tag women tag team match, does it seem overboard to me? Because the point where Bianca went outside and was clutching her knee, trying to, you know, say she had a knee injury, I feel like they're going to that well way too much. It takes me out of it. Like, your knee's not hurt, you know. Like, you sometimes I know it really happens, but they go to it so much. Oh, her knee's, she tweaked her knee, or she. I just feel like they're overdoing that. Like, have you guys noticed they do that a lot during a lot of the matches?
Yeah, I hit the back button on that to rewatch her dive onto the three wrestlers at ringside to see, you know, was there anything that even looked like it? And it was just this nice, safe, soft landing. Her legs didn't hit the mat. There was no twist, no nothing. And, you know, for people watching closely, it feels very orchestrated. It feels like, oh, they're going to a break and they want Michael Cole to manufacture some drama going into the break. So there's a fake knee injury. I'm glad that it worked into the storyline of the match after the break, that they were going after her knee and she was still selling it. So, you know, I mean, it's what WWE does, Nick. You know, I mean, they believe in the formula of what they do right now. I mean, how long did Roman Reigns stand in the ring, and how many things did they sneak in between the beginning of his ring entrance and when he actually spoke? You know, we had a promo, we had hype for live events, we had a commercial or two, we had video packages, highlight packages, and he finally spoke. If you go back and look 15 years ago, I don't think they were doing it anywhere near to that degree. You know, they really believe in anything that isn't live and isn't fresh. We want to wedge it into something that we've already invested people in that is live and is fresh. And the other formula they stick to is three out of four times, they're going to have some sort of drama, someone walking to ringside or, you know, somebody, you know, feigning an injury or, you know, that type of thing as the drama to keep you tuned in. And I get the rationale behind it. It just feels really transparent in formula. And I think you can end up with more negative than positive by overdoing it. And the Belair thing might have been an example, as Sean brings up. What do you think, Nick?
Right. Well, to Sean's point, I think he's right. It's interesting that actually caught my eye, too, you know, in a little bit of a way where I'm like, oh, this again. I feel like we just went through this with even Cesaro on Sunday night, where it's like the story of an injury that appears during the match and then it continues through. Listen, I like the selling. I like the storytelling and his way to use your word, the drama throughout a match that, you know, would be inherent in any physical competition. But then you also need to kind of space it out. And I think this is elements, too, where Belair is green a little in her selling and in her storytelling within the matches that she's in, where it feels, you know, a little overly, you know, hammed up, her injury. And maybe that's what you assume that's what she was asked to do, to really take them to break. But it just it doesn't give that natural feel of into the match. It feels like, look at me, I'm selling the entire time. And I think that's the difference, is it catches your eye because it seems so obvious rather than nuanced.
Yep. And it comes at the time when you're sort of expecting a break. You know, like, you have this clock now, you know, because of the formula of WWE TV. And, you know, with the main event, you know, what's, you know, there's going to be a break, and you're just sort of waiting around for that moment at, usually at ringside, that leads to a commercial break. And, you know, they believe in their formula. It's polished. There's a rationale for it. It's not an irrational rationale why they do what they do. It's just so formulaic that it does feel like there's a format sheet and they just drop things into it, or there's a structure to the format and they just mix and match what they drop into it. And, you know, that's like, to your point, Nick, about shaking things up. I mean, I don't want to go back to GM starting the show, announcing, you know, standing in the ring and spending several minutes announcing the lineup. But I like that this was different than what we often see. And I wish WWE applied that. It worked a little harder to apply that to other aspects of what they do.
Right. You know, and here's the other thing, though, is I felt like the opening wasn't so bad. I tried looking at it in my life and in my world. Like, yeah, I could see the, you know, any office environment bringing out a certain level of employee, you know, everyone has to stand here before the others and be presented, kind of thing. I think it's a lot of this comes to how the performers choose to react. Like, yeah, there might have been someone with a taser behind them that says, if you don't dance, you're going to get shocked. But, you know, you can be cool and feel yourself out if you really know who you are as a performer. And I think in that moment, you can see that Apollo Crews knew who he was as a performer. Belair, yeah, there's a cheesiness there, but it's still, you know, fits into what we see on a week-to-week basis. And there's not a whole lot there left for the Mysterios or the Women's Tag Team Champions. Like, they really don't know who they are. And for that segment, you got to remember, there's so many segments where there are no winners. Nobody comes out strengthened. By that segment alone, if Bayley and Heyman, and thus via Heyman, the Roman Reigns, come out having much stronger heat and having much stronger defined characters because of what they did not participate in, or how, in Bayley's case, how she reacted to it, well, that's a win in its own.
I will say that it's not necessary for pro wrestlers to be portrayed on a pro wrestling show as subservient employees who are dutifully trying to earn the approval of their bosses. I strongly disagree that is the best way to sell tickets to get people to come see stars. You know, it's not the McMahon show anymore, but there's something left over from the stretch of years where the McMahons towered over everything. And WWE felt that there was, for whatever reason, and that's a whole other topic and a whole show, that they felt that the best way, assuming they thought it through, to present their product was wrestlers who were scared for their jobs, bad at investing money, willing to cower in the face of a threat from a boss. They felt that was the best way to portray their, as they call them, capital S, superstars. And that is not typical of professional wrestling in the larger scheme of things. Wrestlers, I think, draw the most money and are most effective and most entertaining when they are independent, when they're portrayed as independent contractors with agency, with power over their bosses, because they're the stars, they're the wrestlers, they're the performers. You know, I was listening to sports talk radio today, and they're talking about Tony La Russa and saying, well, I've got an office and my players have a locker, so what I say counts for more. And it was like, in the commentators were like, that's so old school. You know, the players make more than the managers now. And it's not the era where the manager can just, you know, take control over the players. The players have a lot more agency now in sports. And I think that's good for sports to not have the owners with as much power as they once had, or the coaches as they much had. Some, you know, give and take and parity is good. And that's where having everyone come out and just sort of look like they're trying to be good employees standing on the spot with the X on it on the floor and dance for the boss because he's trying to sell tickets to a new live event tour and placate Fox executives. I think ultimately that does more damage than good. I think fans want to see wrestlers who seem like they're kind of hard to corral and they're free spirits, and the promoter is just there to try to rein them in enough to present a show. And I know that's, you know, there's less power for the McMahons and the bosses, but when the show is booked by people looking through the lens of the boss instead of through trying to present wrestlers as stars who fans are going to want to pay because they're rock stars. Like, who goes to a concert to see rock stars who are presented on TV every week as playing their instruments a certain way to please their boss?
Right.
You know, that's not rock and roll. Pro wrestling's rock and roll at its best. You know, so anyway.
Wait, that's a really fantastic – no, I think it's a fantastic – you know, monologue you just gave right there in terms of the, but even if, because in my head I thought about it, I went, if I were to go back to like 1992, you didn't think that Jack Tunney was making more money than Ric Flair when he was champion, you know, like you didn't, you don't, you, the power was in the wrestlers. It was, yes, there were rules and structure for them to operate in, but you're right, you know, and actually that thought had crossed my mind, even though this year's WrestleMania was very, you know, different, obviously, than what we would have anticipated 2 years ago. But I thought it was such an undercutting moment to start off the show with McMahon with the full lineup of the roster. Here they are revealing their, as stupid as it sounds, their looks for the night and just being defined down. They don't get that grand first entrance, that grand everything, because it was really, as much as they were trying to say it was about the fans, it was really about Vince McMahon in that moment. And, yeah, that's a really excellent example.
And I think it's something AEW gets right. They're better at that, you know, and it comes from kind of starting from a different cultural starting point with Tony Khan and just not the McMahon, you know, inheriting sort of the McMahons are running the show and the wrestlers are here to partake in the McMahon reality show. That has carried over even beyond the McMahons being a constant presence. And NXT gets it better, by the way. Not always well, because there is, you know, they've softened up the videos where, you know, the wrestlers are like, oh, thank you, Triple H, for giving me a job. Thank you for giving me that Johnny Carson. I'm going to do a dated reference here, Nick, but you'll get it. The Johnny Carson thumbs up to the comedian on the stage saying, come on over to the desk.
Yep,
I knew you would. You know, come on over to the desk, we'll chat, as opposed to going right to a commercial. And, you know, Triple H has sort of been that role as the daddy of the developmental group. And I understood to a degree why they were doing it when they were the little engine that could, when they were the minor league and Triple H was the star. But, you know, he's moved away from doing that. But I'm saying NXT hasn't been perfect, but I feel like when I watch NXT, it's about the wrestlers fighting for titles and not the wrestlers being superstars trying to perform for Fox executives. So, anyway, point made and maybe slightly belabored, but we'll go back to Sean. And that's on me, not you, Nick.
No, that was – I love you guys talking back and forth. I really enjoy it. So I was just enjoying it. But, no, the – going back to what I was saying about the selling of the knee, like they also – on Raw and SmackDown, Cole and Graves and all of them, they always go, you know, oh, he might be out. He could be out. I'm like, guys, we don't have to say it after every match. Like I just – it gets too overdone. There's so many phrases they say that just you're like, okay, I'm tired of hearing the same thing over and over and over again. Yeah, they could be, but they're probably not. So I just wish they'd go to different things and try to mix it up a little bit in what they're saying or what Vince is putting in their headset, because it's just like overdone, I feel like. But
yeah.
I guess one other quick thing was I was with you guys on Big E's promo, which is before the match was just not good. It's too over the top, too much for me. I like him. And I want to get behind him, but it's just hard when he's so, you know, you've stated it many times, just not serious enough. And it's just, it was just, gosh, I was like, man, Big E's just tone it down, man. Like, it's just too much. And so, the main question I had for you guys, and then I'll let other guys get on because it's a long line, and I love other callers getting in. But what, I mean, again, to me, there was just no point in the Corbin Nakamura match. Like, I mean, there was, as far as, you know, Shinsuke got his win back on a roll-up. And it's just like, they had the Rick Boogs or whatever, which McAfee had fun with his name, which was pretty cool. I did enjoy that. Him and Cole going back and forth on that. But I just don't know what purpose, again, these matches are serving. It's just like, well, Corbin's going to win, but then Shinsuke's going to steal his crown, which nobody cares about. And then... now Shinsuke is going to get a win back by rolling him up and just rolling out of the ring. Where do you guys think that it might be going with that? Or do you think there's any hope for Shinsuke at all at this point? And I wanted to say real quick, Nick, your show with Tom is really good. I need to catch up tonight, and I will, but it's really good. I like your guys' difference of opinion, even though I don't agree with either one of you at some points, but it's always good conversation. And Wade, I appreciate all you do, man. Thanks for taking my call, as always.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it. One thing I'll say, Nick, and then throw to you for his specific comments is thinking about Big E and thinking about how WWE portrays their characters and some of the talks that Sean just had about Cole, you know, like the way he's produced and the way he's been, you know, just conditioned to react and overreact. Is that he's going to be champion or, oh, my God, will she recover? You draw the fans who you cater to. And WWE should not have just – I think they have a too narrow slice of the fan base in their mind that they cater to sometimes and or a lot of the time. And if you cater to a broader audience with more discerning sensibilities of what is authentic and what isn't and what is – being able to decipher emotions without it being amplified to a cartoonish effect, I think they would draw a larger audience. I think there's – you know, there's examples in tonight's show and really any week where you go, okay, I can see who they're playing to, and that's not me, but what they're doing isn't going to keep me from enjoying the show. There's a lot else that I like about it, but I can see somebody who's sort of on the fence about being a weekly viewer or becoming a new fan or reinvesting as a fan or spending money to go to a live event going, yeah, watch this, but it doesn't feel like it's for me because I kind of see through some of the stuff they're doing, or the emotions feel like they're aimed at a 12-year-old or a fan that isn't like me and is looking for something a little more cool, a little more authentic, a little less formulaic. And so to WWE, I would just say, you know, you're going to draw the fans you cater to, and I would broaden out who they're catering to in part by softening how hard they condescend. I guess how hard they patronize would be the better choice of those words. How hard they patronize intensely to one slice of the audience that they're going after.
Yeah, the problem with Big E, though, Wade, at this point is you're asking him to do a reverse course on what is typical for WWE, which is that you have an impactful character who then slowly transcends as their character develops into more cartoonish versions of themselves, and then they exist in that spot for almost like eternity. You know, these aren't like strong examples, but you know, I talked about Vicky Guerrero earlier, who when she first turned heel was this like great character. Great character. And then she got Excuse Me, and then it just descended into this ultra cartoon, and you can't really pull back from that. And I think that you see that type of, yeah, exactly.
Like if you look at early Million Dollar Man, Teddy DiBiase, there was way more nuance and range to his hair. And at the end, I felt he got cartoonized, and his laugh is not a real laugh. It's a laugh that belongs on a tweener show on some Disney Nickelodeon type channel. It's like, I can't imitate it, but like, it's not, there's no guttural emotional connection. It's just a string that he pulls in his brain and he does it. And it hasn't advanced on NXT with the current thing with Cameron Grimes. And yet, if you look back at the beginning, there was a more multidimensional, grounded, real person at the beginning. And then you get that thing, that laugh, and that becomes the thing, and you just turn your brain off and do it and collect your paycheck and become that cartoon figure. So DiBiase jumps out to me as another example, which you just
And I don't see them, or even maybe even Big E as a performer, you know, being able to pull back on that once it's already been so embedded into who they are for the past, you know, 6 or 7 years at this point. I mean, it's a real struggle to think that that's a real possibility at this point. I thought, to Sean's point earlier, though, about the Nakamura win, first of all, I thought Nakamura as a person made the most of the situation the best he could, even with his social media stuff. Like, I mean, that was funny stuff. It was memorable. Yeah. It was making more out of, you know, what was basically trash given to him, just to at least make it memorable. But what I think that is a problem is something that I also pointed out from the Backlash show. I refuse to call it WrestleMania Backlash.
I didn't.
But, you know, is having these faces win by using heel mechanisms. And we saw this with Bianca Belair supposedly wrapping her hair around Bayley's leg to help her leverage the pin. And then having Nakamura win via the distraction of the guitarist. I mean, this does nothing for the baby faces. You come up with better ways of winning without them really stooping to heelish tendencies to win, especially when they're really not, you know, combating like a plethora of amounts of cheating throughout the match to really like give, you know, combat poison with poison type thing. Like, it just to me felt a little out of nowhere and like a cheated win and really showed them as being weaker than their opponents. And that's a problem. That's a real, real problem. And just to Sean's other point about the show, I appreciated the comments about the show. And quite frankly, Sean, I don't agree with either of us most of the time either. So.
I agree with both of you all the time, which is hard.
Yeah, right.
All right, cool. All right, yeah. So Rick Boogs, right?
Yeah. But did I miss something? Okay. I didn't know what was going on with that, Wade. I wasn't sure if this was like a wrestler that I didn't know or
– Yes. Who is he?
He
is a cult figure in NXT who I saw live at the last NXT show I attended. He's gone by different ring names. Rick Boogsingen, I think, is his actual name. But didn't he go by like Boogenheimer or something like that? Eric Boogenhagen. Brought him in. Like, it's totally normal for some guy to show up playing an electric guitar. Like, I mean, it would be nice to have a little backstory. Like, they didn't even tell us if he's a wrestler. We got no backstory on, you know, him being Nakamura's friend or how they hooked up as some sort of, you know, friends. So I just, it was one of those things. And AEW does this to us too. Like Cody a couple weeks ago did this whole pro-America promo about Anthony Ogogo being anti-American, and they had done nothing on Dynamite to explain that. You had to follow Twitter in order to know the story. And it's like, I just bonk my palm to my forehead when AEW does that, because it's like, I follow wrestling really closely. I didn't know Ogogo did a bunch of stuff. They didn't take time to tell us.
No.
And Cody's doing this like week four promo on week one. You know, so that's what I feel like here. It's like, come on, give us who is he? Now, if the announcers had said, what's he doing here? We got to ask Nakamura who this guy is and what he's all about, and had done more of that, you know, I mean, that's fine too. I mean, you don't have to do a backstory to everybody before you bring him in. But it was sort of like, nope, he's here now, just accept it, and I'll be entertained by him. That's kind of the vibe I got from the way he was dropped onto the show.
Yeah, it was like Slash arrived, and like, okay, we just have a guitarist. Sure, why not? That's I actually thought he was a celebrity when he first came out. It was treating him as if he was, you know, someone. Okay.
And you could imagine, like, if we worked for WWE and went to Vince and go, Vince, what's the deal here? What's his deal? And Vince would look and go, he plays electric guitar. And I'm like, yeah, but what's his back? He plays electric guitar. Like, in Vince's mind, that's it. Now that's all you need to know about him. And now he's going to do what Xavier's been doing, which is, to me, a heel turn every time he does it. Play that damn trombone. It's just to distract a heel, and it's just obnoxious. And now let's introduce another character who's playing an instrument at ringside obnoxiously to interrupt a match. It's not my thing. I vote no. Yeah. Thumbs down. Cool. All right, let's move to more calls here. If you are joining our show in progress, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Friday, May 21st, 2021, and you're invited to give us a call. Our phone number is 347-215-558. That's 347-215-8558. If you are streaming the show from our website, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast app, including Apple Podcasts. Just search Wade Keller in the podcast app and click on the blue logo and the red logo. We have two different sets of podcasts throughout the week, our regular podcast and our post shows that stream live and are available to download in their entirety a couple hours after the shows go off the air. So let's get to our next call, and we'll go to Sergio in Connecticut. Good to hear from you. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
What's going on, fellas? I thought SmackDown was an okay show that, it kind of catches my attention sometimes. Like, I'm usually not paying too much attention, but as soon as Roman gets on the screen, I think most people are like locked in, and that's where I'm at right now with everything else is kind of, you know, fading to the background. But as soon as Roman or any of his bloodline, including Paul Heyman, gets on the screen, I instantly, you know, lean forward in my seat and like, oh, what's going on here? Making sure I catch every little thing that happens because I don't want to miss anything when it comes to that story. And actually, my thing is, I was watching interested to see, like, if they were going to go into any, like, who's the next challenger for the Universal title. Mm-hmm. And unless I'm missing anything, besides Cesaro kind of half-heartedly saying that he wants a rematch for the title, they didn't really push anybody towards that match at Hell in a Cell that you guys saw, did you?
No, Cesaro is a loser, of the show. I mean, like, what a loser. I want a match. Oh, wait, you know, like, that was awful.
When Cesaro said that, I'm like, who do you think you are? You just lost clean. Like, get in the back of the line, bud. Like, when you lose, you got to regroup. You don't walk out and demand another title rematch with no rationale. Poor Cesaro. I mean, that was just – I don't think they did a good job, you know, framing him leading up to the title match, or as you pointed out, Nick, on the VIP post-pay-per-view roundtable with Todd and me, like, they didn't do a good job building him up during the show, and now he comes out and preposterously asks for a rematch you lost.
Yeah, and then gets so easily taken out again.
Yep. Yep.
Go ahead, Sergio. I think maybe WWE gets so wrapped up in causing distraction finishes. Maybe they forgot that they didn't book Cesaro in a distraction finish and just had him come out like if he got screwed, but really he just got beat clean as a whistle, 1, 2, 3. Well, not 1, 2, 3. He passed out in the middle of the ring. I just think maybe they just forgot. Like, oh, yeah, we did. That was a clean finish. Sorry, Cesaro.
Nick, I was going to ask you, who do you think, to Sergio's question, is on the horizon for Reigns, assuming he defends the title this summer before SummerSlam when perhaps a bigger name shows up once they're back to live crowds?
Oh, Jimmy Uso. Yeah,
yeah.
I think that,
so that gets set up next week.
I think it's going to be set up next week with the tag team match and the mechanism surrounding that. And I think it fits. I think especially with the seriousness of everything that should be in Hell in a Cell or revolving around Hell in a Cell, I think that is a continuation of Jay and Roman in Hell in a Cell from last year. I think that makes good sense. There's nothing else that really rises up to that real heated level that I think just the family dynamic of the bloodline is. And that's not such a bad one. I just think it's the shame of the literal physical similarities of the Usos. I think it will have a moment of, is this live or is this Memorex type thing? Because I feel like we just lived through that. And, you know, having two Hell in a Cell pay-per-views so realistically so close to each other, I mean, this feels like, wait a minute, whoa, the whip around is too fast, but I think that's where we're going.
Did you know instantly it was Jimmy when he was backstage for the interview?
Yeah, I can easily tell them apart now.
Yeah. Are they doing enough to separate their look at this point? Because I can tell them apart too now, but, like, I had to kind of look, that's Jimmy. Like, and it's not super obvious until I see Jay.
You know what it is, Wade? It's not that you can tell them apart. It's that you know who Jay Uso is I'm guessing.
That's what I was just going to say is as soon as Jay shows up, you go, oh, that's not Jimmy. You know what I mean? Like, Jay is so distinct in his body language and his facial expressions now. But I'm to the larger audience, would it be good or not for Jimmy if there is an angle next week to, you know, I mean, I barely recognize Tamina. You know, she gave herself a makeover. Should he give himself a bit of a makeover to his look so it is like he's kind of giving up on the Uso brother dream and he's saying, all right, I'm going to be an individual now so that people take him seriously as not half of a tag team but someone who is sort of rethinking and representing himself in a different way where you could maybe – I mean, again, all they have to do is not convince you it's going to happen but give you a story you can suspend your disbelief long enough to get into, which is maybe he does beat Reigns.
Yeah, I mean, eventually they're going to have – I think they could change up his look drastically or really separate out the two of them from each other. But I think there's just still so much in that storyline now of, you know, them trying to – Jimmy trying to, you know, re-put together the Usos as a tag team. And so barring that, while that's still on the table, I don't think they're going to make any big changes to him. I think they're trying – so they dyed his hair. They have him in shorts, whereas Jay's in long pants. They have Jay, I think, very strategically with the shirt to indicate that it is Jay, the right-hand man thing, you know, so that there is that separation. I think it's all intentionally done for viewers to know who's who. But I think, you know, barring him shaving his head and you know, really just having a really distinctful, colorful outfit, like, I don't know how else you really change it. The other thing is they're still going to wrestle similarly, which is that's going to be a challenge for either of them to truly, truly stand out separately from one another, especially when their movesets are so similar. So that's definitely something to watch.
Yeah. Sergio, anything else for us?
Yeah. Actually, Nick took the prediction right out of my mouth. I think it's 100% Jimmy Uso that's going to challenge Roman. I think it comes full circle with Hell in a Cell last year. Like you guys said, maybe too much so, where it kind of seems like a retread. But I actually called Sunday night on Wrestling Night in America to give my idea of Jimmy Uso against Roman with maybe Jey Uso as a special guest referee in that match. So you kind of have, like, little intrigue there. You got Jey Uso, like, he's the right-hand man of Roman Reigns and all that, but Roman does kind of still treat him like trash, and you can tell sometimes in his body language that he knows, like, man, he's treating me like trash. Like, I shouldn't be beating tree like this. And then on the other side, you got his brother, who's basically been calling him a bitch since he came back, but, like, is trying to snap him up. I really feel like that would be a nice way to add a little flavor to that match, whether it's actually in the cell or not, which maybe it has to be, because I don't know about you guys, but I don't know any other match that would, you know, deserve a cell around it, because, you know, usually that used to be special. Now it's not so much. Now it's just, it's that time of the year, put the cell down. But I think the whole family dynamic, put the cell down, Roman attacked Jimmy in the cell last year, and maybe even, like I said, put Jey in there as a special, as a conflicted special guest referee that has to make a decision one way or the other at that night of which way he was going to go. What do you guys think of that idea?
Nick, take it.
Yeah, I love everything about the overall setup. I don't love the guest referee part. That's just not in my bag personally. But I think that especially with Hell in a Cell, there's different things that you can do to create that moment that you're talking about. You know, it can come in various different – it could actually, like, physically have them both hanging off at some point, the cell, and have Jimmy save one and push – or Jey save one and push the other one down. And I anticipate he'll be saving Roman and pushing Jimmy down through the table. Or, you know, if there is a moment within the cell where they're both – you know, really, like, bloodied or and really struggling, and helps one over the other. That's the moment that you're leading towards. So it can come in the form of him being a special referee, which, to your idea, I could very easily see them employing that. But that's what we're building towards, and that's why the Cesaro thing didn't really take hold too much longer into another month. That's why you don't see anybody else rising up to serve that role, because what you're describing – that's where we're going.
Yeah, I don't even think there's a B option. I mean, maybe they're trying to trick people into thinking Cesaro might get a rematch, but that just made Cesaro look bad, even asking for it. Sergio, appreciate the call very much. Thanks for calling.
Oh my God, I think Cesaro is like on the front lawn of the Thunderdome, calling out that he wants a rematch. Like, Cesaro, go home. You're done. Like, here's your check. Goodbye.
Sergio, goodbye to you. Thank you though.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Yep, you too. Have a good weekend. All right. Let's see here.
Wait, can I tell you, I used to be so excited about Cesaro. I remember jumping out of my chair when he won the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. Now I look at him like, what are you doing? Like, I feel like I want to sit down and have a talk with him about why I'm disappointed in him.
Well, what is he doing that isn't WWE's fault that you don't like?
Well, so I think my frustration is I do think WWE tried playing to – I wouldn't even say playing to his strengths, but hiding his weaknesses. But yet, even in that, there were moments that he still needed to step up. And I feel like as a performer, even if delivering a long promo isn't going to be in his wheelhouse, his inability to just be natural in those moments and really be able to just convey anger and in a way that is plausible, that is quick, that creates that competitive environment that we're all talking about that he should, in theory, thrive in. I mean, he really didn't hold up his end in my estimation. I also thought that by the time he reached this level of main event opportunity, there were just things that seemed overall weak. I felt like he really was lacking a major power move in his wheel set to really be a threat to the main event scene. And I don't think him bringing out a sharpshooter, which always I felt like looked a little awkward with him given how long his body is. And it just I just feel like he had the opportunity, but nothing was really lined up for him to really stand out in a really powerful way. And I just think, you know, looking back, you know, I was watching, after our talk on Sunday Night Wade, I went back and looked on Twitter, like, and I was going through my, you know, in my head about how different Todd and I were than seemingly everybody else on Twitter about that match, who was just raving.
Yeah.
And I would really challenge everybody to say, is this a match you're really ever going to watch again? And, you know, there are matches that people say are great that you, no problem. Absolutely, I'd throw that on. I don't believe for 1 second people are going back to rewatch that match. I really don't.
All right, very good. Let's jump next to Jay in Michigan. Jay, thanks for calling up. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I thought, the previous caller, Sergio, man, he really kind of hit all of the points I wanted to make. So, great call, Sergio. And, you know, for the most part, I guess I'll just ask a couple questions and, you know, let you guys run with that, if that's cool.
Sure.
Well, before I ask any questions, I do want to kind of comment a little bit on what Nick said, man. Like, I didn't see what was so fantastic about that Cesaro-Roman Reigns match either, man. And, like, quite a few people seem to have, you know, threw around the word classic. And I'm like, what was so amazing about it? Even in the sense of every time that Roman has gotten to the ring with a guy, it seems as if he's, one, elevated them, and, two, kind of used some dirty tactic to win. But, like, they didn't even think enough of Cesaro to have him use a dirty tactic to win. He just beat him flat out and, like, even made it a point to say, hey, don't help me in this match. So, like, I don't know what kind of endorsement that is for Cesaro going forward. I've never been, like, a huge Cesaro fan, and his moment in this time, you know, in this spot really didn't do anything for me. I don't think he held up his end of the bargain either. So, you know, I agree with you on that, Nick.
Jay, I just fist bumped you all the way from Germany.
So the questions I wanted to ask, man, and Wade, you know, a couple weeks ago, I called up and I said that I felt like they were building towards Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, and you guys disagree with me strongly. I wanted to know, do you feel as if, you know, there is any momentum that you've seen built towards that? Because there's the awkward dynamic that exists between them sharing screen time, but, like, I really just think that Seth Rollins is going to beat Cesaro at whenever he decides to beat him in their next match, and then he's going to start, you know, either trending toward facing Roman, or he's going to win the Money in the Bank and just kind of hang around that scene until he cashes in. You know, he may not even cash in on Roman, honestly, but I think that they will continue to use that Money in the Bank briefcase if he wins it to tease something between them. But what do you think about that?
Nick, before you answer, I want to say, do you think they're going back to the Cesaro-Seth feud because they wanted Cesaro to get a win over Seth to build him up for Roman, but now they want to let everyone know Seth is better than Cesaro, so we're going to have him feud afterwards in sort of phase two, and this is where Seth beats up Cesaro because he's a bigger part of their plans going into summer and fall?
You got it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, yeah, your thoughts on Seth's trajectory, and on the list of possible Money in the Bank winners, you know, Edge being another one, he makes his return there. Is Seth winning Money in the Bank and using that to cash in against Roman an opportunity to tell a compelling, effective story with Seth and Roman?
Well, first of all, Edge winning just sent a shiver down my spine, Wade. Thank you for that. Seth Rollins, you know, I wouldn't have pegged him as a Money in the Bank winner. I think he is Roman Reigns SummerSlam opponent, or at least, you know, looking at the lay of the land right now, you're right. You use the word there's an awkwardness when Reigns and Rollins are together, and I feel like that's intentional. You know, they don't really interact. They don't really, like, if they're almost like you say hello, I say goodbye in terms of how they enter the screen, which that seems intentional. And, the only thing that just sticks out to me, though, is that Rollins is such a weaker babyface, I feel like, than he is as a heel. Now, I don't love this version of his heel character, but in general, I've never thought he really was operating from a point of strength when he's been a babyface. So, you know, it's something to consider that if you're making that commitment, you know, to changing him again, maybe it's also to get ready for a Becky Lynch return down the line of you're eventually going to want him to be babyface anyway, because they haven't shied away from recognizing that relationship on the screen while she's been gone. So, yeah, I think if I was part of that disagreement of you, Jay, at some point, I think I'm more in their camp of agreeing with you now, whether it's at SummerSlam or just a little bit beyond.
Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, I feel like it's going towards SummerSlam. And the reason why I threw the Money in the Bank angle in there is because I agree, like most, Rollins' babyface character just never seems to, like, feel natural or the way it needs to, you know, be. Always, he always kind of has this Shawn Michaels 96 babyface vibe about him, like, I'm playing a face role, but I'm really kind of a jerk, and I'm not a babyface at all in real life. So, not to say Rollins is a jerk like Shawn Michaels level jerk, but, you know, I think you guys kind of get where I'm going with it. It just doesn't seem to connect. So I use the Money in the Bank to kind of say he can sort of stay in that heel role and continue to be like an aggressor, because, you know, him kind of like beating on Cesaro every week, and, you know, you guys are both thinking the same thing I'm thinking. Like, he just pretty much lost to Cesaro, so Cesaro's getting ready to lose the reins, and now, you know, Rollins is going to reestablish his position. I think that, like, it's a noticeable aggression that is now coming out of Rollins that wasn't there previously. Like, when he was kind of like a, you know, cowardly, delusional heel, now he's starting to get more like, you know, a serious heel, which at least makes him able to stand next to Roman. Now, obviously, you know, maybe there's an issue with heel versus heel, but I really think they could just run with, like, a edgier, aggressive Rollins and, you know, Roman being the dominant Roman that he is. I think that you can still kind of do that match.
Nick, your thoughts on that, and I also want to get your thoughts on the, if you could pick one version of Seth who had stayed that version of Seth, and you can say this character, but have him discover it years ago, but is there one version of Seth that it would have been ideal for him to just portray this whole career, so he hadn't been kind of jumping around heel face and taking on these different personas?
Okay, so to start off with the match, and I think that Seth Rollins is going to need to be a babyface to go up against Roman Reigns. You can't set it up for Roman Reigns to be turned face in this whole thing. And by him going up against another major heel, you know, Roman is so cool, you're at the risk of really, you know, becoming too cool and becoming too cheered. And especially with live audiences coming around, I think that's something that needs to be really protected and really be taken care of. I think especially if and when Becky comes back, if there is going to still be recognition of that pairing with Rollins, then you can just get him babyface, because ultimately I think she's a more marquee player to deal with at this point and a priority than Seth Rollins would be. The thing is with Wade, with Rollins, is Seth Rollins lays in a similar lane to me that Triple H has been in for me for decades now, which is my favorite incarnation about them was very, very long ago, and they're never able to really recapture that magic. So I use Triple H as an example. I think his year 2000, early 2001, is the best year of any wrestler that I've ever seen as a wrestling fan. After that, everything was trying to recapture that glory, and after he came back from that quad injury, he was never the same to me. And never, even no matter character-wise how he tried getting back to it, everything didn't align, and it was never the same for me. And that's how I feel about Seth Rollins when he had his knee injury, which was, you know, I think it was 2014 was the year of when he was the wrestler on scholarship of the Authority. That to me really, really worked. And he was at a time in his life and his age where that kind of fit, where he was a young, hungry guy who grabbed this opportunity, and he was just going to stick with the Authority and go all the way. And while that Authority storyline sucked and he really carried the entire show on his back, he was the best part of every show he was on. And I just don't think he's ever been the same since then. I really don't. I just think that he is a person who's really struggling to find identity on the screen. But because he's so good and because there's a history and a buy-in from the audience to him, that he's just going to continue to get these opportunities. And they feel earned opportunities, but they also don't feel great. And I'm sorry, these suits, I mean, like, this is not – it's not good. It's not great. It's eye-catching, sure, and it's curious to see what he's wearing every week. But guess what? We thought that about Sensational Sherry in the early 90s, too. Okay, that wasn't a main event act in the end either. So, you know, let's get him back into a more serious outfit and a more serious presentation, and I feel like that's what he really needs. You talked about Big E needing that. I feel like he is really in desperate need of it, because I worry that this version of him – is going to be another one of those in the canon of how do you pull back from this?
Yes. Nope. That there's so much that Seth is doing that feels as if it would be hard to be anything else other than this, or to ever lose the memory of this if he tried to correct course. And I think they'd have to have a very deliberate storyline that sort of hit the reset button on him if they felt that he had reached a point in his career and his relationship with the audience where they were ready for him to present himself in a different way at a different stage of his career. But there needs to be a transitional moment or transitional story that they tell for a stretch of time where he kind of shakes out of it and enters a new zone. And, you know, there's nothing left of Seth from the Shield. You know, I mean, he has been through so much since then. It is when he and Roman are in the ring together, it's like, you know, an old high school buddy who doesn't even look or act like you remember, and you've grown apart, you guys see each other, and whatever was there, it's just like, it's just different now, you know, it's just different now. That's how it feels when those two, are opposite of each other. All right, Jay, back to you for any follow-up or additional topics.
Nah, I think you guys pretty much nailed everything with your analysis. And only thing I do believe is that the reincarnation of Seth Rollins is coming, and I think that we're on our way to that. So I'll leave it there. And, you know, thanks for having me on. As always, you guys have a great night.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. We will keep an eye out for the reincarnation of Seth. All right, up next, let's go to Nick in Brattleboro. Nick, thank you for calling. Thanks for holding. What do you think of SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hey, Brother Nick. How you doing tonight?
Oh, thank God. I was so panicked I wasn't going to hear from you tonight.
Listen, I want to echo, I think it was Sean who said, you and Tom are just rocking it. And it's fun. It's, you know, I'm sitting in the car, you know, on my, you know, daily drive, just chuckling, listening to you guys. Anybody who's listening, you got to go VIP and listen to that show, Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. It's first rate.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. We're having so much fun, Nick. I really appreciate that.
And if you ever need a guest, Nick, just let me know.
I'll keep that in mind.
And Wade, I'm very disappointed in you tonight. Mr. Wordsmith, you didn't get all over WWE for having a parade and having no one walk one in front of the other somewhere. The temerity of WWE to misuse the word parade. See what I did there?
Yes. It really was a gathering, an assembly, but not a parade, yes.
I agree with what you guys were saying in terms of it was kind of cool to see, but it was, God, it was just so WWE, if you gather what I'm saying. I mean, it was just, yeah, I mean, I think someone was standing there with a cattle prod going, if you don't dance, we're going to shock you. You know, it was something else. And I still want to know what are Shayna and Nia Jax, who are Raw stars, doing on SmackDown, and they're not the tag team champions, so they don't have the free pass to go back and forth. I want those four wrestlers to just stop wrestling each other.
Yeah, that's definitely fair. I didn't even think of that. Until, you know, what's funny, Nick, what I was thinking was I actually liked the pairing of Bailey with Baszler and Jax. I thought that, like, visually, like, worked for me. It did, but now I'm pissed off that I didn't realize that they shouldn't have been all together. You know, there's a clumsiness. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, it was just funny because Cole made a big point of saying, well, Natalya and Tamina can go anywhere they want because of the tag team champions. Well, but SmackDown's their home. It was right. Almost like it was very sloppy.
It is sloppy, but I do think that, and I agree with you. The tiring of seeing Jax and Baszler go up against Tamina and Natalya. Yes, it's time to move on from that. It hopefully after next week. But what's interesting is, I mean, it's also time to really reinfuse Jax and Baszler into the singles women division because they're hurting. They're definitely hurting at this point. And unfortunately, I mean, Baszler's taken so many losses at this point, but I think she could be, I mean, would you even say reheated if she was never really properly heated in the first place? I don't know. But, you know, to have her just be positioned from a point of strength, it's necessary, and I think Jax would carry with her at least the gravitas of feeling a little bit more important than, like, those Riot Squad members or anything of that similar type level. So I think they're needed in a women's division, and get them settled there soon.
Yeah, my way of heating Shayna up, and it could be also the pandemic era where some of Shayna's movements, you know, her mat wrestling and stuff isn't super conducive in a non-audience environment is bring up Marina Shafir and I can't remember her other one's name, not to be active wrestlers, but just to be Shayna's sidekicks. I mean, they were so effective as a trio, and with them interfering and then Shayna beating the tar out of whoever they were interfering with, that there was such a good tableau of those three that I think that could help heat Shayna up, and also I think live audiences will help.
Well, the Jessamyn Duke was released, so it'll have to be just, unless they retire, just Marina Shafir. That was part of the NXT cutbacks this week.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
But there are a number of wrestlers you would have to be pretty hardcore to have remembered or knew were under contract, but she was one that jumped out a little bit. Yeah, I mean, Shayna Baszler, I was hoping we'd see some hint of something that would lead to something new for her, and I'm with you, Nick, that Nia Jax's been pushed hard enough and strong enough that she'd be a credible singles wrestler in whatever they present to fans for Jax next. So we'll see, but they did invoke the brand-to-brand invitation, all the once a quarter you can appear on another show thing, which means they won't be back next week. You know, they played that card. They're going to go back to Raw. I am definitely ready for a reshuffling of those matched up against each other.
Yeah, it's actually been interesting the last couple of weeks when Seth's come down to beat up Cesaro. Roman just kind of disappears, which I find strange in that he's the head of the table. Why would he leave, so to speak? But I think it almost could be that they're really trying to keep him and Seth apart. That, you know, it's – and obviously they can do it because there's no fans there, you know. You know, I think it's – you know, there's something happening. And, I mean, it could be that, you know, to turn him babyface, you know, he's beating the crap out of Cesaro and then he, you know, he has an epiphany and he helps him up or something. Or at some show, Becky Lynch walks out and Seth walks out behind her carrying their baby, instant babyface. I mean, you know. Yeah, I mean, my dream for Roman was that if they could hold off on Jimmy and let him win, and I know they can't, but let him win the Royal Rumble, and then you've got this, you know, monster match between the two if they keep building the heat. And lacking that, don't you do it in Hell in a Cell, but have Jimmy win Money in the Bank. And then that creates a whole bunch of tension that can be, you know, done at SummerSlam or whatever, you know. But I think you're right. I think it's going to go Jimmy and Roman at Hell in a Cell, and then Edge will come in for the summer yeah. battle. I know, Dave, you're upset. I apologize.
I mean, I literally just felt my soul leave my body. It was like I was just kicked with a black mast right in the face.
All right.
And last point I'll make, and I'll let you guys go, is they have such a dearth of – how's that for a word? They have such a dearth of baby faces to go up against Roman, to have Black come out as – one can only assume a heel. I was like, no, he'd be a great babyface to put up against Roman, and a real, you know, a solid contender that you could believe could win. You know, one black mass and that's it. You know, but I'll let you guys talk about that. Have a great weekend. It's very sunny and nice here on the East Coast, that's it.
Awesome. Nick from Brattleboro, thank you. I would say that was a bliss call, but Aleister Black already used that word, and I don't think it applies.
Oh, okay.
I just in terms of the vocabulary, you know, what's the word that they pulled out of the thesaurus this week? And the word you don't hear every week, and bliss, was an Aleister Black's promo. What was the context of it? He says, "Oh, I think he's telling the fans you have become your identity to be loathsome and bliss. You are sick and dying animals." So, yeah, Nick, any thoughts on Brattleboro Nick's final comments?
No, I think you could get there as a babyface with Aleister Black, but having him come into a roster on SmackDown if he's going to be a babyface, he's going to be fresh. He's going to be fast-lined against people who he quite frankly would likely lose again. So that's not so great. So let's start him off here. I think this is probably in the right. I think this feud with Big E, I think this is the right place for him initially. And then, you know, if there is something that we can build him up as an eventual opponent for Reigns, like that can come down the line. But I think for him to enter into anything where he loses too easily, too fast, that would not be good for him in the immediacy.
No way. All right, very good. Let's jump to Kyle in Baltimore. I haven't talked to Kyle in a while. Kyle, good to hear from you. What stood out on SmackDown tonight for you?
I guess it's the women's division itself on both rosters. It's very jarring to me that ever since because they were hyped so hard about the four horsewomen with Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, and Bayley for the longest time, and then ever since now that Becky was gone and then Charlotte's gone for a while, and then all that stuff now having Rhea, and I just see Rhea and Bianca as champions, and I'm thinking to myself, man, the it's so different and not the same, and it'll have that same feeling how I felt when Sasha was champion, or when Becky was champion, or even when Charlotte was champion, even Bayley. It was like, I feel that like they're just like, I think that Bianca's a little bit better champion than Rhea is right now, but still, Bianca's having the same attitude like Sasha. They're both the same. I like both women, of course, but they're both the same characters to me. They both, you know, Bianca's super confident, always says EST and all that stuff. But I just watched this thing for myself that I really missed the times when it was 2015 to now when it comes to the women's division, because they were really hyping up those four women. And it just feels like now it's just about I feel like Bayley's a bigger star than Bianca because it feels like she is, and Charlotte's a bigger star than Rhea because I feel like she is, and even Sasha when she comes back. So it's just, I don't know, what do you feel about that? I still have that feeling that it's still about the four horsewomen.
Yeah, Nick, what do you think of Kyle's point?
Well, Kyle, because I still think it's about the Four Horsewomen, and I think I think you're right, and I think it's it's a really good observation. I think, you know, Kyle, it's funny. As soon as I heard you were calling, I was like, well, "There's no Sasha Banks. What are we going to like?" Because we always talk about.
No,
I mean, no, Oscar. But like, I just feel like, and I actually mean that as a compliment to you, because you are an example to me of what I've always thought was this really tangible support of Sasha Banks. Now, I do think she is being sidelined for a brighter day, and I think that's actually really good for her. I think WWE knows that she's the star right now and needs to be protected as such. And I think it is better for her not to be just in the way while Bianca Belair is just going to be winning for quite a bit of time. I think there was a miscalculation by having both Ripley and Belair win at the same time. It is not dissimilar from when Batista and Cena won their championships in the same night at WrestleMania 21, although it is dissimilar because they weren't really as heated up as those two gentlemen were back in the day. But I do think Ripley comes across to me as not being ready for the spot that she's in and not really having a character that's defined enough to be really the carrying the division. And I think it gets overshadowed by Charlotte, who, even though I still think there's a lot of character things going on with her, she's still who she is. She still has so much history embedded in her character. With Belair, she is leaning in far too much on the just the cartoonish elements of her act, and that comes through. And whereas you have her just really doubling down on those things, like patting her ass and twirling the hair, and now employing the hair in matches, you have Bayley, who's really created layers to her heel act that is more than just the Karen act that she was when she first turned heel. That now, like, she, you know, her look is changing a little bit more, and she has she's just infuses those little nuances, like I recalled earlier about, you know, her calling out Apollo as someone who she naturally would be more aligned with than anybody else who was standing on that stage. You know, those little things go a long way, and it feels like there's a lot more depth to her than there might be with Belair, or at least where Belair is, the trajectory of her is going, which doesn't seem to me to be honestly all that exciting. So, you know, there's something to be said. But here's the thing, Kyle. I don't think that – I think you might have a little bit of rose-colored glasses to the past, because it's been quite a long time, I think, since we've had ever a really great run with the women's champions. I think we all have individual preferences that we really like. But it's really – I don't know that the women's division has really ever fully recovered since – Ronda left and Becky won the double championships at WrestleMania 35. Not that that wasn't the right decision to make, but it felt like they were building up to that moment, and then they had that flubbed finish. And ever since then, it felt a little directionless until, you know, the Sasha Banks and Bayley stuff earlier this year.
Nick, I want to ask you, and I want Kyle to answer this too when you're done, is there somebody who would be elevated and a good fit to be part of Roman Reigns and Usos and or Jey Uso and Heyman, who could be entered into that dynamic and elevated? And it doesn't have to be a conventional, like, good fit. It could be an unconventional, but that's why it would make sense to Ivor. That's how it could work fit. Because when we talk about elevating women, they drop the ball with Ripley. You know, it's not too late. I mean, they can, you know, fix that. Bianca, I think, is just cartoonized in a caricature of somebody who could be a megastar if she was just more grounded and toned down and more like she probably is in real life. But is there somebody out there who could be put in that group? And you don't have to rush into it. You know, there might be a right cadence to do it where all of a sudden you've just created a star by doing it.
Are you talking about a woman, a female act?
Okay.
So I, for the longest time, have thought that actually Sonya would have been the right person for it. I felt like aesthetically, like, she fits in with the dark, brooding, you know, elements of her hair and her costuming and all of that. I think that that's still a strong possibility that I think she would have been a really great fit for that. Even though I know that, you know, Nia, Tamina, and Naomi would all, I guess, family-wise be fits there. I don't see that. I don't enjoy that. But I would actually – you're going to think I'm crazy. I think, you know, to actually have Sasha Banks join would be great. I think I think it would be great. I think what would be really cool about, I feel like that's where the conversation was going, but I do believe that because, you know, there's a couple things. If that faction would become like the protected group that wouldn't be exposed, wouldn't be expected to be wrestling week in, week out, that would play more to her strengths and how they book the women's division to not have her in the ring. If she's not going to be champion, then she's going to be taking losses, and she shouldn't be taking losses. So, like, to have her operating with such a faction that is presented at such a high level would protect her in that regard. I also think she just personality-wise fits, and I also think she would really benefit from being more intimately interwoven with Paul Heyman as a protection of her. You know, she was the way—wait, I don't know if you remember. I said that she was the one person in their talking smack phase where, you know, Paul Heyman was trying to make people through their interactions. She flubbed that opportunity. That was not – she had probably the worst showing of everybody in there, which means she probably needs it the most to be further, you know, working with him in those moments. So I think in the end, she would be the best person for it.
I'll throw Raquel Gonzalez's name, NXT champ, in the mix as a longer term. I think she needs more time in NXT. But I think just she would – she's the one who would be starting from a lower point, and it would give her instant identity. It would hide any weaknesses, and one of the weaknesses is she's so big, but she's very likable, and it's tough to be a babyface who's larger than your opponents, but instantly, with Heyman talking for her, all she has to do is strike a pose and have facial reactions and body language that's subtle but tells a story, and she would seem like an unstoppable force if Heyman, I think, worked right next to her, and they gave her a very deliberate style. So just in terms of, like, how do you take this act with Roman? We got an email on this coming up, and use it to not just get Roman over and not just elevate the Usos, but who can also gain from it? And when you say Sasha, I'm like, you know, yeah, I mean, she has a lot to gain from it, but at the same time, she's established. She's a star. So you're saying, let's get the best version of Sasha possible, or a new version to refresh her. But in terms of just almost from scratch, you know, Rhea Ripley might have worked, but that's, you know, I'm not saying it's too late, but you can make that instant splash with I won't say an unknown figure, because NXT isn't that far off from Raw in viewership, where it's just obscure if you're on Tuesday nights, but it would be a way to define her instantly on the main roster.
Wade, you know who else, I mean, I really think could benefit from it is Charlotte. I think she's in an identity crisis right now. I really do, and I think that to have her be in there, even though she's not literally in the bloodline, there is that family connection that, I mean, even though they don't really bring it up all that much, but when you talk about the bloodline, it's not just about Roman Reigns. It's about the family's, you know, vast history in wrestling that does come through in some significant way. And I think she really would really benefit from being in that, you know, that family member that's on scholarship, sure, maybe, but with that darkened edge to her. I don't see a young up-and-coming woman being paired with them, though, beyond, you know, Sonya Deville as being someone who would just be a little bit out of the main event ilk that would come into it. I just don't see that happening.
All right, Kyle, how about you? Chime in on this.
Well, I used to have Sasha be part of Roman Reigns' faction. As much as it's a cool idea, I don't really see it. I think she'll still be by herself, and she'll just go after Bianca like herself as a heel and do what she was doing before. I don't really see her connecting with Roman Reigns. I don't see that. But in terms of having like Naomi be a part of that would make sense because, you know, they're really, you know, there's relation there. But Sasha, I don't see it. And so that was just my thought. It was just that I was just watching tonight, and I've been watching also on Raw, thinking to myself, man, I miss Becky. And I think about the time when Sasha and Charlotte had their feud, and even from last year when Sasha and Bayley were the stars of the women's division last year, and how dominant they were. And it was such a jarring thing that saying that, wow, there's Sasha's gone for now, and, you know, Becky's gone, and Charlotte's doing whatever. It feels like the biggest star. Bayley tonight felt like the biggest star. And so I just think wow, this woman's division is still revolving around them four. And look, it's still a good thing because they're still, all of them still young and still doing great work. I'm just, but without them, if they were gone, if all four of them were gone right now, the second, I mean, Becky's already gone, but you could get rid of all those three right now, right now, and you'll have Rhea and Bianca. I'd be like, oh, that isn't good. So I just had to just mention that because it was very jarring that, you know,
they're
still the biggest star.
Thanks, Cal.
So, yeah.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Cal. You have a good weekend now.
You do too. You the same.
Thanks. Yep. All right. Let's, I can't believe we've been talking for over an hour and a half. This time just flew by, Nick.
Yeah, great.
It's time to bring Javier into things. PW Torch VIP podcaster and pwtorch.com contributor from Miami. Javier, what have we left on the table for you, and do you want to chime in on anything we've already talked about?
Hey, Nick. I pretty much everything was touched on, but I'll go ahead and start at the beginning. I'm more along the lines of UID. When it first started, I was like, oh, here we have the parade of idiots standing there. By the way, parade is also a ceremonial formation of a body of troops before a superior officer. So that, you know, parade is used like perfectly there, considering they're just troops in front of a superior officer. Which is why it already put me in a bad mood watching that. And the first thing I'm looking for is Roman Reigns. I'm like, okay, good. He's not there. And when
they should have made Roman
introduce him,
I think we all agree on that. They should have made Roman Reigns.
So
we can all agree that would have helped Roman Reigns' character to have him dance next to Dominic and Natalya. And then we could, anyway.
So I was thrilled that he wasn't there. And then Sonya Deville called him out, and I'm like, please don't come out. And then I had a moment of panic because they played his original music. I'm like, did they go back to the original music? Please no.
Yep.
And then Heyman comes out, and he says, these guys are not champions. They're title holders. And I'm like, surprised because flabbergasted.
Demeritized.
Because, you know.
Demeritized.
Because he, you know, like, they understand the difference, you know, they understand what makes a champion and how, like, little a lot of their titles mean. And, you know, for Heyman to just call it out as it is.
Yes.
And saying that, you know, no, he's going to, you know, he'll be out on his own time. I love that. And then Bayley comes out, and I'm looking at Bayley and how she's carrying herself, and I'm like, there's a champion. She feels more of a champion than anybody who is standing on the podium. And I can't, understate the fact that they're standing out on the stage while Bayley's the one in the ring. So just that image, I want to see Bayley, win. And, I did like the fact that she knew her character enough, because I actually made special note of that when she says, hi, Apollo, and so while she's running everybody down, I thought that was great. Those two aspects are great, but I think it demeaned everybody else that was involved. And Bianca Belair, I mean, she comes into the ring, and she's your top woman. So that was, that was a powerful statement. But just the fact that she started already like kneecapped in the beginning, and then, Bayley's such a strong, Bayley, I thought Bayley overshadowed her in that moment.
Nick, anything you want to add to what or respond to regarding Javier?
No, totally agree with you, Javier. Totally, totally agree.
Yeah. Yep.
The other thing, I'm probably going to hate it by next week, but I really did like Rick Boogs coming out with Shinsuke, because it tells me that they've got something in the works for Shinsuke instead of just, him, disappearing again into the ether. So I'm happy with that. I mean, besides despite the distraction finish and all that, at least it shows that they have something. I'm sure I'm going to regret it by the time next week. But for today, I'm happy having seen that.
Nick, you had mentioned earlier the Shinsuke vignettes of him enjoying being on the crown or wearing the crown and flaunting it. And like the whole thing was juvenile, you know, I mean, I think AEW's pulling it off with the Young Bucks and the sneak, the $10,000 sneakers or whatever. But the idea of battling over a crown and Corbin being upset about it and the idea that he can't wear a different crown. And then you have Michael Cole, you know, we can't even call him king if he doesn't have his crown. Like the only way that you're a king is if you have a crown. It's just like, it's just so silly and juvenile and stupid. And then you have Shinsuke just delighting in it. Like he's just so, like into it that it does add, it softens the blow of it being like just turn the channel. Like when somebody can take something and run with it and be as into it and going as far as they are with him driving around and then posting to social media, I mean, there is a redeeming value to it if that's not the type of thing that you just hate about wrestling. And if it is, well, there's no way performance will offset that. But if you're open to a performance saving something, then, yeah, that's credit to Shinsuke. And I think the energy – I mean, I don't want to hear the electric guitar solo version of Shinsuke's entrance. He's got a great entrance. Both versions I loved. I don't want them to switch to this now. I'll feel like I've lost something, and I'll blame Boogs for it. But Boogs is a dynamic, energetic personality. And if they can figure out how to, you know, direct that in a certain way, I think it can breathe some life into Shinsuke's character. I wouldn't say that I'm optimistic or pessimistic. I am intrigued to see where they take this. Nick, are there any warning flags? Are you looking forward to this? Any thoughts on that? And then we'll go back to Javier.
I think you're right, though. I think Nakamura is making the most out of this, and he looks like he's having fun, and that read through. You know, when you talked about earlier about what are the things you remember about any show where that Kevin Dunn would want you to watch, I remember the cat. I just remember Shinsuke Nakamura. I remember that vignette. I mean, it was kind of funny. It was fine for what it was. I think that it's too early to tell how annoying this is going to get. I would certainly have no hope for this being some big grand push for Nakamura. But this is, you know, something that has been brought up and been talked about at the Torch for a very long time sometimes it's good just to have baby faces have friends. And so for Nakamura's character to just have someone that, even if it's not a permanent tag team partner, but someone who's just there and a friend for him, well, I mean, that's fine too. So I think it's too early to tell, but I don't think this is going to be anything great for anybody involved in the long term.
All right, Javier, back to you.
And for the people who don't, we've seen Boogs in he won the 24/7 championship during those commercials for Old Spice. He was playing Joe Average and Night Panther.
Yeah.
And you know, so I thought those were entertaining. So, but yeah. So he's former 24/7 champ. I'm also kind of. I'm kind of glad that Aleister Black took out Big E, because that moves Big E away from the Intercontinental Championship. And
right.
It could go one of two ways. It's likely going to go 50-50, but whoever comes out like at 51%, I think that it's good in Big E if you're in – intent is to at some point have him have a go at Roman Reigns. That way, you know, you move him away from that. He gets a victory over Aleister Black, and he's ready, you know, and you know, that helps build him towards having an angle with Roman Reigns. Otherwise, you know, Aleister Black, it depends on whether, you know, if all of a sudden Vince McMahon sees something in Aleister Black, or he's just building it up now so he could, you know, build up Big E for the, you know, for something more.
No, Aleister Black cannot lose this feud. He can't lose a single match to Big E. No. That can't happen. I mean, I also think I would be shocked if that did happen. I don't think this is the springboard for Big E to head to Roman Reigns. I think that's a longer game if they're going to get there. I think that for Aleister Black, I think that Big E would be the pit stop to maybe a Kevin Owens or something like that to gradually work his way through the mid-card. But I don't see him losing to Big E. That can't happen.
I what's frustrating about this conversation is we're not thinking, and not I'm not putting you two guys, that we're not thinking about option C, which is like neither guy wins, or Black, Big E wins and WWE treats it as a big deal to elevate him to Roman, but in reality it's tainted and they protect Alistair at the same time because somebody attacks Alistair to transition into Alistair into a different feud, but they celebrate like Big E won the feud, so he's protected. So, like, I mean, I would like to be able to talk about this like people talked about, you know, Memphis and Golden State tonight, and it's one and done, and there's going to be a winner, and there's going to be a loser, and it's overtime, and it's, like, dramatic, and there's going to be sad people who lose and happy people who win, and it's settled, and the winner moves on and the loser moves down. That's not how WWE works, and it should. Sometimes it does, but it's not, doesn't happen often enough. So I just throw that out there. It's like there is this option C. I'm more with Nick on this in terms of, I think, what it means and where it's going. I think you're more optimistic, Javier, than I'm able to be right now about the trajectory for Big E and, frankly, whether he's earned it with the work he's put in on promos and matches and his presence. But there is an option C where WWE tries to have it both ways, is my point.
Yeah, I mean, that's most likely what they're going to end up doing. Because I think Black has a dominant win. In their first match, he has a dominant win over Big E just to establish, you know, he's a, you know, how much of a, I mean, they did the same thing with Apollo Crews when Apollo Crews took out Big E and injured him. You know, I can see Black doing the same sort of thing, and then you just get into a program with Big E that then Big E ekes out a win, you know, ahead of time, hopefully, to, you know, protecting, you know, well, hopefully in their minds, protecting Aleister Black. I mean, that to me is the most likely scenario with, you know, but because between the two of them, I think Big E comes out ahead just, you know, slightly. You know, my biggest worry would be if they don't see anything in Black and this is like they're setting him up like they did Gulak just to try to get over, you know, the next person, and the next thing you see is Aleister Black running for, running after the 24/7 on Raw, you know, that would be my biggest concern. That would be my biggest worry, because with Black, there really is a big, you know, wide range of where they see him, you know, because, you know, he could be great. And at the same time, they might not be seeing anything in him. I'm hoping they see something in him because they gave him those four, you know, produced vignettes. So, you know, it's just like, I like to prepare, you know, I prefer to hope for the best and prepare for the worst. So, and that's a big gap.
Yeah, you're an experienced viewer. Yes. No, you're right. You're an experienced viewer. That is a good approach, healthy approach to take. Stave off frustration and, you know, also not be too cynical either. What else?
Yeah, and on the, you asked the question on a female wrestler joining the Bloodline. I think between what they did with Apollo Crews and how Roman interacted with Seth Rollins when they did, what was it, a couple weeks ago, I think it'll have to be someone who's a blood relation or marriage relation. Because, with Apollo Crews, he mentored him. And, you know, there was a thought that, oh, maybe he'll join. And he didn't. But, you know, he was still instrumental in turning Apollo Crews heel. And when he interacted with Seth Rollins, I got the feel of, like, two criminal bosses where Roman Reigns is clearly the top guy in town. And Seth Rollins is only allowed to operate his corner of the city under, you know, Roman Reigns' permission. But Seth Rollins approached them, you know, hey, you're going to take care of your guy because your guy got into my business. And, you know, that kind of relationship makes me think that, you know, if he wouldn't bring in someone like a Seth Rollins, who's like a, you know, the next big heel or something, or Apollo Crews, who he mentored, it makes me think that, you know, when they're saying Bloodline, they're specifically saying Bloodline. Although I do like Nick's idea of Charlotte, just because she's a strong legacy character, you know, I do kind of like that idea, but I think most likely would be a Naomi, which could, you know, help revitalize whatever she's doing, or, you know, Tamina or anybody that you can, you know, fit into that family.
You
want to
put someone,
you know, for real or not.
you got to put someone in that spot who doesn't get made fun of for 15 years for not being worthy of that spot, like certain members of the Four Horsemen or when the NWO got watered down. And so you have to be careful because that's not a fair burden to put on somebody who just isn't going to be able to carry what would come along with being an addition to that, much less the only woman in that group. So you got to be careful you don't put someone in a position where you're just putting them out there to fail. That said, you know, it's intriguing, and I hope they consider it. And my vote's still Raquel Gonzalez. I'm just, they can make something up. I don't care, but I think she's standing in the ring. If she's standing in the ring with Roman and Heyman and whoever's left of the Usos, if anyone, I think you can make her a star, and I think you can use that to transition her into a babyface, you know, 6 to 12 months later.
Hey, Wade, what do you think about a returning Zelina Vega? You think that would work?
You know, I think she's too small to be a
wrestler. Yeah, but I mean, like a female act, part of the act.
No, you know why? Because she is an alpha talker, and I don't think you need an alpha talker with Heyman. I think you want – that's why I go with Raquel, because she can be quiet and strong, make facial expressions, body language. I think she's sort of a natural for that. And I see it as the vehicle to transition her into a breakout babyface eventually. But I don't want someone who wants a lot of mic time. And Zelina can get over herself or another wrestler on her own by playing more of the Paul Heyman role or being more of a, you know, Sami Zayn, Bayley type, where Kevin Owens really like, well, her talking is what sells the tickets. And so she doesn't need to stand there and be part of a faction.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think it'd be worth exploring. I think visually she'd look great. I think this would, to me, call to mind a little bit more of like the 96 version of the Four Horsemen, where they had, you know, a few managers, and that Elizabeth was primarily with Flair, then Woman was down the card with Arn and Benoit. And I don't think Heyman should be with all of them. And I actually think Jay would really benefit from having her in his corner. So I don't know. Something to talk about.
I'm starting to sympathize with Tom Colahue a lot now, more Nick.
Why? Excuse me. I can sign off this call. Javier, take it for me.
Just disagreeing with you and not result, and you know, just, and you being like, nope, I still disagree. And here's my scenario and here's how I see it. So, no, it makes for it when it's genuine and not manufactured, it makes for good podcasting and some good exchange of ideas and everyone kind of defending in each other's, points of view. Javier, back to you.
Just curious, any word on Edge, whether he's like done or if they're just saving him for something?
I haven't heard he's done. I haven't asked because I assume they're just keeping. They don't want him to become a everyday, you know, no big deal, he's here guy. They want him to be involved only in top stuff. And I mean, he seemed beat up and ready for a break. So you know, mental, physical, or whatever. So if that's what's happening, so be it. But no, I guess I can ask, but I just assume they're going to keep him out until crowds are back.
Yeah, I'm also wondering if he, like, you know, is finishing rehabbing the injury that he had, and maybe that's why, you know, he was kind of looking the way he did on the way
Even so, Javier, though, I wouldn't want him around right now otherwise. Like, I wouldn't want him, you know, I mean, I want him to be a big deal. I Edge is deep into his 40s. He should be saved for when there's a higher chance he's going to get hurt based on his track record and his age than just about anybody who's a money draw right now for them. So make sure you keep him in the – of all the things you can do with him, just do the 30% most important stuff that takes physicality and get what you can out of him with a fan base that appreciates him and understands his awesomeness. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, no, I was just trying to – yeah, I was just trying to see if I should, you know, keep in my head for plans for, like, towards SummerSlam and stuff like that. So,
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so, you know, to see, like, you know, maybe he might be a nightmare for poor Nick over in SummerSlam. not sure I understand Nick's enmity towards Edge, so.
Well, I think he would be a good opponent for Aleister Black. I think that would work for me. I don't want him anywhere near the championship picture, though.
Go ahead, Javier.
Yeah, I think I believe that's pretty much what I got, man. Although,
all right.
There is one thing that's kind of driving me crazy, and this also applies to Nick, not you, Nick, other Nick. Not that Nick either. Lindbergh, there we go. Yeah.
Wait, Nate Lindberg? Nate Lindberg?
Is it Nate? Not Nick?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, Lindberg.
I mean, it depends on who you're talking about. Maybe there's a Nick Lindberg.
On your report, on your SmackDown report, it's Aziz with two E's, not an I. It's been driving me crazy.
Oh, I think I'm spelling it wrong too, then.
Yeah, you are. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Aziz with two
E's.
Well,
thank you
kind
for pointing it out.
Just driving me nuts. I don't know why.
Someone needs to send a nice email or a note and go, hey, you know.
Wade, I hate to call you on this, but I did DM you that. I mentioned that it meant glorious.
Oh,
and we made a joke about teaming him up with.
I thought it was at first, Javier, I thought it was Commander Z because they weren't enunciating it. And then I was like, oh, it's Aziz. Okay, all right, very good. And I thought, now that I think about it, like you were trying to stress like how it's pronounced. I wasn't even thinking about the spelling, so I just like moved into the IZ thing. So, all right, well, thanks. I'm, you know.
See, Wade, this is your payback for that Colihue comment.
Very much so. All right, so A-Z-E-E-Z. I'm glad. I don't want to do that forever. So, yeah.
And there's also a little bit of payback for the Kazarian thing. We're going to talk about that on AEW, with the next AEW show. So next Friday. Well, actually, no. Do you know how you're going to do next Friday? Because that's going to be an interesting day.
I know. Yeah, I'm not. I haven't really finalized how we're going to handle that yet. We got something to figure out. I can't do a post show while watching AEW, but it's the AEW go home show. But almost who's going to still be up in time? You know, I don't know. Who knows? We don't know. We don't know yet.
A double episode. Yeah. It's going to be fun when Rampage starts too. So.
Yeah, I mean, if it's all it is, I know it's supposed to be a third-hour Dynamite. I don't want a third-hour Dynamite. I want an hour of Rampage. Like, make it different. I talked about that in the Color Hotline last night at length. I want them to make that show distinct and not have it just feel like an extension of Dynamite with the same format, the same layout, and it's interchangeable with the middle hour of Dynamite. Like, it reeks of the potential of becoming Thunder, and I think it's a lot of money. AEW, I understand not turning down money, and they've talked about a third hour for a long time, and it's a chance to be on TNT and not TBS and all that. It's going to move to TBS anyway, so I don't know. I'm nervous. Dark doesn't matter, you know. It's on YouTube, and it's a bunch of people, developmental guys, and keeping people, giving them reps, but. I'm nervous even about a third hour right now for that.
It's funny, Wade, about what the lure of money will allow this company to make the same mistakes that a lot of its members were so critical of other people for making the other companies like WWE for having a third hour and whatnot. You know, like it is impossible for these companies to turn down that money, and it's what really weakens their product overall. I think we've seen that time and time again. Curious to see how AEW does with it.
That said, you know, all the Fox affiliates who are like getting, you know, a nice demo lead in from SmackDown at 10 Eastern, you know, all the news networks that are Fox affiliates. And now they're like, you know, half the fans are going to turn off and go watch TBS or, you know, TNT at first and then TBS at 10. It's like, it's going to cut into whatever boost they were getting, assuming they're getting a boost. I mean, how many wrestling fans who watch SmackDown are like, oh yeah, that news story intrigues me. I'm going to watch. You weren't going to watch the news anyway, but it's going to cut into it. You know, it takes away a little bit of that flow of viewership. So yeah, a lot of moving parts and a lot of things, pros and cons for AEW, but you know, inheriting the SmackDown audience a little bit, sticking it to Vince, you know, I'm sure they see that as an additional bonus that was not part of Thunder with the rationale that WCW utilized. But Eric Bischoff told me in a five-hour interview I did with him that, you know, biggest mistake was taking money and expanding programming when he should have kept things tight and higher quality and leave people wanting more. And the cash grab, he said, was the biggest issue, the biggest decision he would take back. Javier, thank you. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the spelling correction. If you look at my report now, you will not see the wrong name, at least not in the first reference. we'll check all references soon. So I've been busy multitasking here. So thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good night. Yep. And I haven't said it in a while, so go VIP. I'm a big fan of fencing and the verbal fencing that Todd and Wade do is just amazing. So, so check it out.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate it. People can get a sample of that on our flagship yesterday because we did offer every 3 weeks we offer the part of the fix as our simulcast for the Thursday flagship show on the Wake Up the Pressing podcast. So check that out, everybody. Thanks, Javier. Always great talking to you.
Good night.
Yep, good night. All right. We have run long, but despite running really long here, I want to fit in this email, and then I've got to wrap up, Nick, and I know you got to get up early to do another show. So I referenced this earlier, so that's why I want to hit it. Dave from Harrisburg, PA, said we are still just in the first hour of the show, but I wanted to write this email while it's still fresh in my mind. Watching Roman Reigns every week has just been a masterclass in being a heel. Every bit of his act is so deliberate. The music, the walk, the looks, the cadence of his voice. I never enjoyed his face run, but he is my favorite act right now. I can't picture an endgame to his title reign, and I really don't want to. Thanks for all the great podcasts, and everyone go VIP. So you can comment on that, but I also want to add a question to you, Nick, which I wanted to ask earlier in the show and didn't get to, and this is a perfect lead-in. Are people going to buy tickets to see Roman Reigns? To be a draw starting in mid-July, well, starting sooner when people start buying tickets. WWE's hoping so. That was a huge message on tonight's show. Like, I mean, at least three times they made a big deal of going live again, and they should. They should repeat and make a big deal out of things that they want to be a big deal. But they were talked specifically about Reigns being a guy that you pay to see. Ratings aren't good. Viewership's not strong. A lot of things at play. But are people going to want to say, I saw this Roman Reigns act in person in 2021? Is that going to sell?
So, yes. I'm going to start there, and then we'll walk backwards to the email. Yes, I think it will. You know, there was a moment, and I don't know if you had this thought, but I definitely recall having that thought the first time they were referencing, the live shows, and thinking, Roman Reigns almost feels too big for that now. Like, but that's what makes him feel so novel to go see is like, you know, his character seems so protected and above it all that the concept of him performing at the Trenton Arena seems bizarre to me.
That's funny, but yeah, I get it. Yeah. It's like seeing somebody do something in person when all you do is see them as a larger than life TV or movie star, and just getting to be in a building with them, you know, whether it's a stand-up comedian or whatever, you know, I mean, different contexts, rock star, you know, you're like, I get to be in the building with this guy who has only been on TV and not in front of fans this whole time.
You know, and Wade also, I mean, Reigns always had that thing about him where no matter how the audience was reacting to him, like on the televised shows, when you saw him live, he did always seem better live at the house shows and a bigger star than everybody else. I mean, there was a show I saw, I think it was 2017 or 18 when at the Trenton Arena. And, you know, the show was fine. It was well enough. You know, at that point, Balor was moving a little bit more up the card. He seemed special. But then when Roman Reigns came out, you know, take all of the baggage of the reactions on the television, you know, he felt like a big deal when he walked out at the end.
Yeah.
And to him being there, I mean, I would want to go see this version of him just to say you saw it. You know, this is, you know, just like when you feel like when there's a singer, even if you're not a big fan of them, when you know they're, to use the phrase I used the other day, that when they're in their bag, like when they're in a particular moment of pop culture, that you want to be able to say you saw them when. I mean, back in the day, Wade, I went and saw Miley Cyrus during her Bangers tour. I never bought a Miley Cyrus thing in my album in my life, but I knew you were seeing something that felt, you know, once in a lifetime. And I think he is in a moment where you think that he's, quite frankly, going to be once in a lifetime. You know, Roman Reigns, if he excels, I mean, who knows what future awaits him, if he's going to be a John Cena and leave for movies or something down the line. He does feel like this is the – when we talked about what's the best version of Seth Rollins we've ever seen,
this is the best version of Roman Reigns anybody has ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
So for that, you know, he's their best shot at people wanting to go see anyone live. McIntyre isn't going to be it. Lashley certainly isn't going to be it. It will all be about, quite frankly, Roman Reigns.
I think some people are going to want to see Drew. I think less so now.
This is the biggest version, I think.
Oh, no, yeah, yeah. And I think less so than 3 and 6 and 9 months ago. Like, I think there's just a little bit of staleness with Drew, and part of that is just lack of building up opponents for him. My God, I mean, they teased two members of Retribution. It's just like, you got to have opponents. Every lead babyface knows. Every lead heel knows. I mean, you've got to be proactive behind the scenes, rattling cages and letting, you know, making noise. And I don't think he's a squeaky wheel when it comes to that stuff. I think he's professional, but I don't think he's just pulling Vince McMahon aside going, you got to get me opponents. You know, I don't think it's an era where there's that kind of leverage. I think what we see on TV bleeds over behind the scenes with a lot of wrestlers in terms of, you know, I'm just here to earn a really big paycheck. And it goes back to what Roman said. He set the culture. I do what I'm told and I hope to get rich. And I think there's a lot of that going on, but now Drew, I think, is paying a price a little bit. Not that in the middle of COVID rattling, you know, making a big fuss over not having opponents ready for him, you know, was going to do a lot of good. I mean, it's been a weird year. But my point is, I do think that was a lead into, I do think some people are going to want to pay to see MVP and Lashley. I think being present for Hurt Business and them walking out with that, with their swagger and their dapper outfits. And I think they're I think Lashley and MVP are going to sell some tickets.
Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But it's not a super long list.
I think they're like third or fourth or fifth down the list. I think actually Sasha Banks is much higher than all of them now.
Who? Okay, off the top of your head, totality of Raw and SmackDown, who are the top draws right now that are going to spark excitement and early ticket sales?
Well, I mean, if The Fiend is on the table, I don't know if they are. But I think number one would be Roman Reigns. I don't know if The Fiend is an option for house shows, but he would be number two.
I'm just talking Raw and SmackDown. They got to sell tickets to these TV events. That's not a given anymore. That's true.
Okay. All right. Then I feel more comfortable about that. Yeah. I'm just going to do a more broad. Don't yell at me over the order. But I'm going to say Roman Reigns, Fiend, Sasha Banks. You know, the hope one day of Becky coming back. And then I think you get into Lashley. And then under Lashley, I would say Drew.
Yeah. I mean, Charlotte?
I love her, but no.
I mean, I know, and I'm saying it like while exhaling, like, you know, like it's not a deep, like, I think there's people listening going, well, I'm going to pay to see, you know, Ruby Riott. Okay, good for you. But I mean, I'm talking about people who, you know, like are going to be an inspiration.
Oh, who is saying that? Her mother?
Well.
And even then, her mother's lying. I mean, come on.
So, but I mean, there's people who will pay to see New Day or the Street Profits or Rey Mysterio because he's a legend, or Matt Riddle and Randy Orton because they get a kick out of him. But or Kevin Owens because they followed him since ROH or something. I'm talking people are going to sell tickets on a large scale where you go, they made a difference to how many people attended the show in a way that you know is, and it's not. They say they're superstars, but they don't treat them that way. And they don't have those larger-than-life figures. So they got their wish. You know, there's not a lot of wrestlers with a lot of leverage in WWE right now because not many of them make a difference. And WWE should have been careful what they wish for because they got tired of Ultimate Warrior holding up for money or Hulk Hogan going, I'm the reason, not you, Vince, for the success. Or Shawn Michaels, you know, taking his ball and going, oh. They got tired of all that drama. Well, guess what? You don't got drama, but you don't got draws.
Yep, and I like that. Ooh, that's good. That's a line. That's good.
So they're going to find out in July and August where they stand. And I'm not making predictions. I'm just evaluating. I look at this roster. I'm not seeing a bunch of people jump off the page other than Roman. And they basically said that tonight. There's title holders and there's the champion. And that's a blessing and a curse because it's good to have a top guy. But, boy, it'd be nice to have a lot of other people in contention for selling tickets and being, you know, a true small-ass superstar.
That's right. And, Wade, you know what I'm taking away from tonight is when the pandemic is over and you have a convention with the parade of PW Torch contributors and analysts, I should not attend. That's my takeaway to reinstate my importance.
If there's an assembly and a gathering of contributors, I'm going to put like tape on the ground with X's, and I'm going to just yell at somebody for not standing in the right spot. And then I'm going to play the Weight Killer Pro Wrestling Podcast theme and make y'all dance.
There you go. With the live guitarist.
Oh my God, that'd be so dumb. I mean, it's just like when I say stuff like, and they do that. They like literally do that. And I know it's not the same thing, but it's also not different enough to not matter. You know, but I'd say how dumb it would be to do that. All right, Nick, you got an early call for the morning podcast. I look forward to seeing what you and Tom have to say about the whole week in WWE, including some thoughts on the live events and the cutbacks in NXT and all kinds of stuff. But and the build going into summer. So go VIP, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time you hit refresh on your feet, because there's always something for you guys out there listening. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. And thank you, Nick. Check out Nick's SmackDown Hits and Misses also on pwtorch.com this weekend. Nick, how can people follow you on Twitter?
They can follow me at Nicholas Barbati, NicholasBarbati. And Wade, thanks again for a great night. Always great talking wrestling with you.
Awesome, and follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller, and follow our brand at PW Torch. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, everybody.